44. Here's how to praise with perfect timing. Use the knee-jerk wow. I'll never forget the first time I gave a luncheon speech in front of strangers. I'd practiced for the stuffed animals on my bed and my roommate Christine, but this was my debut in front of a real audience. As I shakily got to my feet, I looked out at 17 smiling Rotarians waiting for my words of wit and wisdom. My tongue was dry as chalk dust, and my palms were wet as a fish. The audience might as well have been 17,000 judges waiting to sentence me to eternal humiliation if I did not inform and entertain each. I gave a last panic-stricken glance at Christine, who had driven me to the club, and began, "Good afternoon. It gives me great pleasure." 30 minutes later, during scattered applause, which I feared was obligatory, I crawled back to my seat next to Christine. I looked expectantly at her. She smiled and said, "You know, this dessert isn't bad. Have some." "Dessert? Dessert, dang it, Christine! How did I do?" I silently screamed at her. A few minutes later, Christine told me how much she, and she assumed everyone else, enjoyed my talk. Nevertheless, by then it was too late. The crucial compliment-craving moment had passed. Technique number 44, the knee-jerk wow. Quick as a wink, you must praise people the moment they finish a feat. In a wink, you must say, "You were terrific." Don't worry that they won't believe you. The euphoria of the moment has a strangely numbing effect on the achiever's objective judgment. Say that they have just successfully negotiated a deal, or cooked a terrific Thanksgiving turkey, or sung a solo song at the birthday party. No matter whether their accomplishment is trivial or triumphant, you must praise it immediately. Not 10 minutes later, not 2 minutes later, immediately. The moment the winner walks out of the boardroom, the kitchen, the spotlight, the only sound the victor wants to hear is, "Wow." 45. Here's how to make them want to compliment you. Use the boomerang technique. We have a national weakness. We don't know how to compliment. In fact, I would like to dedicate the following technique to my French friends, who contend that the French are better at everything they do. Well, I do concede one point. The French are indeed much better at receiving compliments. Americans, unfortunately, are beastly at accepting adulation. Several months ago, in one of my seminars, the group was discussing compliments. One fellow insisted that girls don't like compliments. "Girls don't like what?" I asked incredulously. He explained, "I once told a woman she had beautiful eyes, and she said, 'Boy, are you blind.' The poor chap was so wounded by her reaction, he became gun-shy and had not aimed a compliment at a female since. What a shame for womankind, and what a blight on his social skills." Upon receiving a compliment, many people demur, or utter an embarrassed little, "Thank you." Worse, they protest, "Oh, well, not really, but thanks anyway." Some people toss it off with, "Oh, it's just luck." When you react this way, you visit a grave injustice on the complimenter. You insult a well-meaning person's powers of perception. But leave it to the French folks to come up with a congenial catch-all phrase. Upon receiving a compliment, they say, "Oh, vous êtes gentil." Loosely translated, that means, "How kind of you." An American saying, "How kind of you," could sound stilted, like the little flower girl in My Fair Lady trying to be cultured. Nevertheless, we Yanks can express the French gentil sentiment with a technique I call the boomerang. When you toss a boomerang, it makes an almost 180-degree swerve in midair, and it soars back to land at the feet of the thrower. Likewise, when someone tosses a compliment your way, let the good feeling soar back to the tosser. Don't just say, "Thanks," or even worse, "Oh, it's nothing." Let them know of your gratitude and find a way to compliment them for their compliment. A few examples. He says, "You really did a good job on this project." So you say, "Oh, that's so nice of you to tell me. I appreciate your positive feedback." Or she says, "I like those shoes." You say, "Oh, I'm so happy you told me. I just got them." Whenever someone shines a little sunshine on your life in the form of a compliment or a concerned question, reflect it back on the shiner. Technique number 45, the boomerang. Just as a boomerang flies right back to the thrower, let compliments boomerang right back to the giver. like the French, quickly murmur something that expresses, "Oh, that's very kind of you." Part 7. Direct dial their hearts. Hundreds of people have formed impressions of you through that little device on your desk, or your bed table, or your kitchen wall. And they've never actually met you. They've never seen your smiles, felt your frowns. They've never grasped your hand or enjoyed your hugs. They've never read your body language or even seen how you dress. Everything they know about you came through tiny filaments, sometimes from hundreds of miles away. But they feel they know you just from the sound of your voice. That is how powerful the telephone is. Powerful, yes, but not always accurate. For years, I dealt with my travel agent only by phone. Rainey, my agent who I'd never met in person, gave me rock-bottom prices on airfares, cars, and hotels. But her snippy phone personality really ticked me off. A dozen times, I vowed to find another agent. One Monday morning, several years ago, I received bad news and had to book an immediate flight home for a family emergency. There was no time to wait at the airport, so I jumped in a cab and asked the driver to wait in front of the travel agency while I grabbed tickets and a boarding pass. Like a lit fuse, I zipped into Rainey's agency for the first time. The woman, sitting at the front desk, sensed my frenzy, and she sympathetically jumped up. She gave me a reassuring smile and asked how she could help me. As I blithered on about my need for an emergency ticket, she smiled, nodded, and lunged immediately into action. What a terrific lady, I thought, as she printed out the tickets. Moments later, darting out gratefully grasping my tickets, I called over my shoulder, "By the way, what's your name?" "Leo, I'm Rainey," she said. I whirled around, and I saw a thoroughly congenial woman with a big smile on her face, waving to wish me a safe trip. I was dumbfounded. Why had I previously thought she was so snippy? Rainey was, well, so nice. Sitting back in the cab on the way to the airport, I figured it all out. Rainey's friendliness, her warm smile, her nods, her good eye contact, her body language, and her "I'm here for you" attitude were all silent signals that didn't travel through the wires. I closed my eyes and tried to remember the voice I had heard just moments ago. Yes, it was Rainey's same crisp, curt pronunciation, but her friendly body language made her seem like a different person from the brusque agent I dealt with on the phone. Rainey's phone personality and her demeanor in person were completely different shows. I realized it's the same with all of us. Your personality, mine, and everyone's could be likened to a show, a theatrical performance. You want to make sure yours is a box office smash, not a flop. 46. Here's how to sound more exciting on the phone. Use the talking gestures technique. I have a friend, Tina, who designed costumes for an off-off-Broadway show that became a smash hit last year. The tiny show was such a critical success that it won the heart of an angel, a backer, and it went to Broadway. There, the show laid a big, fat egg. When I read the bad news, I called Tina. "Tina, why did the show get such bad reviews on Broadway?" Tina told me that, sadly, the director didn't insist that the actors and actresses change their performances to adapt to the new surroundings. The actors' understated movements, which had moved small audiences alternately to laughter and tears, were lost in the big Broadway house. Audiences couldn't see their subtle gestures and moving facial expressions. Tina told me the performers neglected to make their movements much bigger to fit the big new medium. That excellent advice is not just for actors. Whenever you are talking, you must consider your medium. If your face were on a big movie screen, you might get your message across with a wink or an eyebrow raise. On radio, however, that would be meaningless. Because listeners couldn't see your wink, you'd have to say something like, "Hi, cutie." Because the listeners couldn't see your raised eyebrows, you'd have to say, Wow, I'm surprised. Your body language and facial expressions comprise more than half of your personality. When people don't see you, they can get an entirely wrong impression, as I did with Rainey. To get your personality across on the phone, you must translate your emotions into sound. In fact, you have to exaggerate the sound, because studies have shown that people lose 30% of the energy level in their voices when they're on the phone. To make up for your missing eye contact, punctuate your phone conversations with, uh-huh, or I hear you. So your listener knows you're nodding in approval, verbalize, I see, oh, that's great, or no kidding, interesting, or tell me more. She didn't see you hitting your head in surprise? Better say, what a surprise, or you don't say. He just said something impressive, and he can't see your look of admiration? Try, oh, that was wise of you, or you're no dummy. Of course, you need a big verbal smile in your repertoire. Try, oh, wow, that's funny. Obviously, you're going to choose phrases that match your personality and the situation. Just make sure your phone listeners hear your emotions. Technique number 46, talking gestures. Think of yourself as the star of a personal radio drama every time you pick up the phone. If you want to come across as engaging as you are, you must turn your smiles into sound, your nods into noise, and all of your gestures into something your listener can hear. You must replace your gestures with talk, and then punch up the whole act by 30%. 47. Here's how to sound close, even if you're hundreds of miles away. Use the name shower technique. When you're not sitting across from each other, resting your elbows on the same desk, your forks on the same table, or your heads on the same pillow, you need a substitute for intimacy. How can you create closeness when the two of you are hundreds of miles apart? How can you make the person you're talking to on the phone feel special when you can't pat their back or give them a little hug? The answer is simple. Just use your caller's name far more often than you would in person. In fact, shower your conversation with his or her name. When your listener hears it, it's like receiving a verbal caress. Thanks, Sam. Let's do it, Betty. It's really been good talking to you, Kathy. Saying a person's name too often in face-to-face conversation, however, sounds manipulative. But on the phone, the effect is dramatically different. If you heard someone say your name, even if you were being jostled around in a big noisy crowd, you'd perk up and listen. Likewise, when your phone partner hears his or her own name coming through the receiver, it commands attention, and it recreates the closeness that the phone robs from you. If your listener is drifting, it brings him right back. If she's opening mail, she stops. If he's picking his teeth, he pulls the pick out. When you say someone's name on the phone, it's like yanking the person into the room with you. Technique number 47, the name shower. People perk up when they hear their own name. Use it more often on the phone than you would in person to keep their attention. Your caller's name recreates the eye contact and the caress that you might give in person. Saying someone's name repeatedly when face-to-face sounds pandering. But because there is a physical distance between you on the phone, sometimes you're continents apart, you can spray your conversations with it. 48. Here's how to make them happy that they called you. Use the, oh wow, it's you, technique. Bring! No matter whether you hear the ring in the boardroom, the bedroom, or the bathroom, self-styled telephone experts tell you, smile before answering. Some pros even suggest that you perch a mirror right next to your phone to monitor your grin. Been there, done that, doesn't work. One evening, in the middle of my weekly mud pack facial, the phone rang. The horror of seeing myself in the phone mirror made my voice as hideous as my face. I immediately trashed the telephone teacher's advice along with the mirror. Who wants to sound like a dizzy Pollyanna, a no-brain Cheshire cat, A lonely recluse whose life is so dull that the big thrill of the day is a phone call. Any phone call. From anybody. Big winners don't smile before answering. They put a smile in their voices after they hear who is on the line. That's when it counts. Answer the phone unemotionally, but professionally. Say your name or the name of your company. Then, when you hear who is on the line, the little trick is to let a big smile flood over your face and make it audible. Oh, Joe, how nice to hear from you. Sally, how are you? Bill, I was hoping it would be you. I have a friend, Steve, in Washington, D.C. He heads a major trade association that lobbies on Capitol Hill. Whenever I call Steve, I never know which of his dozens of assistants is going to answer. Nevertheless, whoever answers gives me the same warm response. First they say, Cable Telecommunications Association, their name, and then, how may I direct your call? No fake friendliness, no prefab smiles in their voices. I am sure they are not beaming back at themselves in any mirror. When I say, is Mr. Efros available? This is Leal Lowndes calling. That's when they become super friendly. Oh, yes, Miss Lowndes, they purr. Definitely, let me put you right through. Wow, does that make me feel special? As I'm waiting for Steve to come to the phone, I fantasize him sitting at the head of a long mahogany table in his weekly staff meeting. I can just hear him instructing his staff. Now, if the president or some higher-ups in the White House call, put them right through. Oh, and of course, if that important woman Leal Lowndes calls, put her right through, too. While visiting Washington last year, I had lunch with Steve. I took the opportunity to tell him what a pleasure it was to call his office and how I appreciated his staff's warm phone reception. I thanked him for familiarizing each with my name and mentioning that I might be calling from time to time. Steve looked across the table at me and blinked. Leal, he said, you teach telephone skills. Haven't you caught on? Huh? Well, forgive me if I'm bursting a bubble, Steve said, but everyone gets that reception no matter who is calling. Oh. But Steve, I protested, when I'd recuperated from the initial disappointment that I was a victim of a technique and not a VIP. What if the caller is unknown, a complete stranger? Surely your staff shouldn't fake that they know the caller. Of course not, Leal. In that case, I instruct them to show energy and enthusiasm over the reason that they're calling. For example, suppose the caller is a cable operator wanting to join our association. The caller would get a smile and a sincere, oh, yes, Mr. Smith, I'll put you right through. Yeah, but suppose the caller is selling something, like office furniture, I challenged. Doesn't matter, Steve said. The salesperson gets the same reception after the staffer hears why he's calling. If my staffer says warmly, oh, office furniture, the caller feels good. And I find the salesperson a lot easier to deal with later. Technique number 48. Oh, wow, it's you. Don't answer the phone with a, I'm just so happy all the time attitude. Answer warmly, crisply, professionally. Then, when you hear who is calling, let a huge smile of happiness engulf your entire face and spill over into your voice. You make your caller feel as though your giant, warm, fuzzy smile is reserved especially for him or for her. 49. Here's how to get what you want by timing. Use the what color is your time technique. When Alexander Graham Bell invented the phone, he and his comrades had no use for such trite phrases as, hi, how are you? Nor did Bell and his boys ever just start spouting their ideas into their listeners' ears. The first words out of their mouths in those times were, can you talk? Bell and his buddies were, of course, referring to the technical capabilities. Little did they know, however, that more than 100 years later, big winners would use a form of that same greeting. Today, of course, can you talk? Means, is this a convenient time for you to talk? Before launching into conversation, they always ask, "Is this a good time to chat?" Or, "Did I catch you at a good time?" Or, "Do you have a minute to discuss the widget account?" Whenever you place a call, always, not occasionally, not frequently, but always ask about your timing. Make it a habit. Make it a rule. Make it a self-punishable crime if the first words out of your mouth don't concern the convenience of your timing. Examples. "Hi, Joe. Is this a good time to talk?" "Hello, Susan. Have you got a minute?" There are many ways to say it, but it all boils down to, is this a good time for you? My friend Barry, a broadcaster, accomplishes more in a day than most people do in a week. He came up with a clever conversational device that assures that he will never shatter anyone's emotional sundial. He calls it, "What Color Is Your Time?" Barry introduces the device by telling people he's calling that he has great respect for their time. He then asks permission to start his future conversations with a question that assures he will never disturb them at an inopportune moment. Barry says he's going to ask what color their time is. They should honestly answer red, yellow, or green. Red means, "I'm really rushed." Yellow means, "I'm busy, but what's on your mind? If it's quick, we can deal with it now." Green means, "Sure, I've got time to talk." Technique number 49. What color is your time? No matter how urgent you think your call, always begin by asking the person about timing. Either use the "What color is your time?" device or simply ask, "Is this a convenient time to talk?" Don't risk getting a no for what you want just because your timing wasn't right. 50. Here's how to get them to call you back. Use your 10-second audition technique. Producers of big Broadway musicals can be brutal during auditions. An anxious wannabe star, after rehearsing his audition for weeks, steps on stage. He opens his mouth to sing. After a few notes, the heartless producer shouts, "Thank you, next!" Dreams of stardom dashed in 10 seconds. Business people's professional dreams can also be dashed in the first 10 seconds of their audition. Their audition is the message that they leave on someone else's answering machine. Salespeople, suitors, candidates and competitors who leave crisp, intelligent, upbeat messages on voicemail get called back. Losers with lackluster tones and uncrafted messages never hear from Mr. or Mrs. Make It Happen. Make sure your message reflects 3 C's: confidence, clarity, and credibility. In addition, make it entice, entertain, or interest the listener. A flat, "This is Joe, call me back," doesn't score with big winners. Technique number 50, your 10-second audition. While dialing, clear your throat. If an answering machine picks up, pretend the beep is a big Broadway producer saying, "Next!" Now you're on. This is your 10-second audition to prove you are worthy of a quick callback. Incidentally, if someone's voicemail comes on unexpectedly and you are unprepared, quickly hang up. Take a moment to craft your entertaining, enticing, or interesting message. Rehearse it once with confidence, clarity, and charisma. Then redial to leave your great hot message. A funny thing may happen. If your party answers this time, you may be disappointed that you can't leave your superstar message. 51. Here's how to make them say, "You have super sensitivity." Use the "I hear your other line" technique. Whenever you're on the phone talking to somebody, you hear a lot more than their voices. In the background, you might hear dogs barking, babies crying, or a crackling sound. For all you know, the dog has his tail caught in the refrigerator, the baby has to be fed, or the house is on fire. When you acknowledge the sound by asking if they have to take care of it, you warm the hearts of your listener. When you are talking to someone at work, you often hear another phone ringing. Say immediately, "Oh, I hear your other line. Do you have to answer it?" Even if not, he or she will appreciate the gesture. If he does have to catch the other call, you can be sure he heard nothing you said after the first ring. He's only thinking, "How can I interrupt this babbling person without being rude so that I can answer my other phone?" In fact, with every bring, more irritation sets in that you are holding him hostage from doing what he has to do. Here is the technique guaranteed to save you from being in that uncomfortable position. Technique number 51. I hear your other line. When you hear a phone in the background, stop speaking, in mid-sentence if necessary, and say, "I hear your other line," or "your dog barking," "your baby crying," or "your spouse calling you." Ask whether she has to attend to it. Whether she does or not, she will know that you are a top communicator for asking. Part 8. Here's how to break the most treacherous glass ceiling of all. Every week, when I was a kid, my mother took me to the National Geographic Society to see a film. The one on tigers invades my nightmares these many years later. Sitting there in the darkened theater, I watched a mother give birth to 3 tiny cubs. One was born with a mangled leg. I witnessed how all the other tiger cubs excluded him, and right there, in front of the cameras, he was tortured to death by the others. I remember crying and thinking how the healthy cubs were like a few of the kids in my school. Sometimes they could be very cruel. Kids haven't changed much. When I give talks for colleges and young people's groups, the discussion often turns to popularity. Everyone wants to be liked. Occasionally, students tell me stories about how some girl has a minor physical defect, say, a crossed eye or a nervous twitch. They say some kids laugh and make fun of her. Or a boy has a limp, so no one chooses him for their baseball team. Even if he can run just as fast as the other kids, some of his classmates don't like the image of, quote, a cripple being on their side. The years go by, and kids become adults. But not too much changes. Adults are not as cruel, happily, about physical disabilities, but they can be brutal about social disabilities. Social disabilities are insidious because often we don't recognize them in ourselves. We can be blind to our own social handicaps and deaf to our verbal deficiencies, but we are quick to recognize them in others. How many times has one of your associates made a dumb, insensitive gaffe? How often have you written somebody off because of some stupid move? Do you think he knew what he was doing? Of course not. He had no idea he was crossing a line or stepping on your toes. Probably no one ever told him of the subtleties that we're going to discuss in this final section of How to Talk to Anyone. 52. Here's how to win their heart when their tongue is faltering. Use the lend a helping tongue technique. In ancient Japan, if you saved someone's life, it was their self-imposed task to spend the rest of their life serving you. Nowadays, if you rescue someone's story, a molecule of that ancient instinct still gushes through his or her veins. It happens all the time. Someone in the group is telling a story, and just before their big point, boom, there's an interruption. Someone new joins the group. A catering person with a tray of crackers and cheese comes over, or a baby starts crying. Suddenly, everyone's attention turns to the new arrival, the nibbles on the tray, or the adorable little tyke. Nobody is aware of the interruption, except the speaker. The group forgets all about the fact that the speaker has not finished his or her point. Most joke and storytellers are too timid to say, after the invasion, "Now, as I was saying." Instead, they'll spend the rest of the evening feeling miserable that they didn't get to finish. Here's where you come in. Rescue them with a technique that I call lend a helping tongue. Technique number 52. Lend a helping tongue. Whenever someone's story is aborted, let the interruption play itself out. Give everyone time to greet the new acquaintance, to dote on the little darling, or choose between the cheddar and the camembert cheese. Then, when the group reassembles, simply say to the person who suffered story interruptus, "Oh, now please get back to your story." Or better yet, remember where they were, and then ask, "So what happened after the..." And then you fill in their last words. Watch the gratitude in the storyteller's eyes as he stabilizes where his story sunk, and as he sails off again toward being the center of attention. His expression and the recognition of your sensitivity by the rest of the group are often reward enough. You are even more fortunate if you can rescue the story of someone who can hire you, promote you, buy from you, or otherwise lift your life. Big winners have an elephant's memory. When you do them subtle favors like lend a helping tongue, they find a way to pay you back. 53. Let them know what's in it for them. Use the bear the buried with 'em technique. Savvy business people know that everyone is constantly tuned to the same radio station, WIIFM, WIFM. Whenever anyone says anything, the listener's instinctive reaction is, "What's in it for me?" Sales pros have elevated this constant query to the exalted status of an acronym, WIFM. They pay such strict attention to the WIFM principle that they don't open their pitch with the features of their product or service. Top pros start by highlighting the benefits to the buyer. I once invited a casual acquaintance to lunch. I had hoped to consult with Sam, the head of a marketing association, on my speaking business. I told him my desire and jokingly asked if an hour of his valuable time was available in return for a lunch at a great restaurant. That was my way of saying, "Look, Sam, I know there's no real benefit to you except the tasty lunch and the dubious pleasure of my company." In other words, I was revealing what's in it for him or what's in it for you. I call it WIFY, W-I-I-F-Y. To make the meeting even more convenient for him, I said, "Sam, you choose the date and the best restaurant in your neighborhood." The day of our lunch consultation rolled around, and I traveled 45 minutes across town to his chosen restaurant. As I entered, I was surprised to see an assortment of people arranged around the largest table in the room, with Sam as the smiling centerpiece. Obviously, this was not the setting in which I could consult with him. Unfortunately, Sam had already spotted me by the coat check. I was trapped. It wasn't until after-lunch coffee arrived that I realized why Sam had assembled the group. He wanted each to donate presentations on their particular expertise to his organization. The sly fox hadn't revealed his own WIFM, "What's in it for me?" Had Sam been a straight shooter and a big player, he would have told me on the phone, "Leo, I'm getting a group of speakers who might be helpful to my organization together for a Dutch treat lunch. I will, of course, try to answer your questions about your speaking business, but we will be a group of 10. Would you like to join us, or shall we choose another date when we can have more privacy?" I would have gladly spoken pro bono for Sam's group had he been upfront about it. Instead, by not revealing WIFM, we both lost. I lost a half day, and because of his trickiness, he lost my free speech for his group. Technique number 53. Bear the buried WIFM. Whenever you suggest a meeting or ask a favor, divulge the respective benefits. Reveal what's in it for you, and also what's in it for the other person, even if it's nothing. If any hidden agenda comes up later, you get labeled as a sly fox. 54. Make them want to do favors for you. Use the "let them savor the favor" technique. Susan Evans, one of my clients, heads up a large real estate firm. Once, sitting in her office discussing an upcoming project, her secretary buzzed. "Excuse me, Miss Evans, it's your brother-in-law Harry on the phone." "Oh, of course," she smiled. "Put him on." My client, making apologies for the interruption, picked up the phone. I left the room for a few moments to give her privacy. When I returned, Susan was just hanging up, saying, "Sure, have him phone me." She then told me the call was from her brother-in-law, whose young cousin worked in a gas station, but was interested in a career in real estate. She said, "The young man is going to call me, and I'll see if I can help him out." It was obvious that she was happy to do her brother-in-law a favor. We picked up our discussion where we left off. Not 4 minutes later, the secretary buzzed again. "Miss Evans, a Sonny Laker is on the line. He says he's your brother-in-law Harry's cousin, and he's supposed to call you." My client was taken aback. I could tell from her expression she was saying to herself, "Boy, my over-anxious brother-in-law didn't waste any time, did he?" It seemed obvious to both of us what had happened. Like greased lightning, Harry must have hot-breathedly called Cousin Sonny to give him the big headline, Susan Evans would see him. Then, by dialing Miss Evans immediately, Sonny made it seem the big deal interview was the most important event in his otherwise dull and dismal life. True or not, one verity remained. Little Cousin was insensitive to an unspoken rule that big winners always obey. Don't jump in immediately when someone is doing you a favor. Allow the person granting the favor time to savor the pleasure of agreeing to it before having to pay up. Technique number 54. Let them savor the favor. Whenever a friend agrees to a favor, allow your buddy time to relish the joy of his or her generosity before you make them pay the piper. How long? At least 24 hours. 55. Here's how to ask for favors and get them. Use the tit for, wait, tat technique. I once asked a well-connected friend who works in a top Los Angeles talent agency if she knew any celebrities I could contact for a project I was working on. Tanya flipped through her Rolodex and came up with just the names I needed. It was obvious to both of us that now I owed her big time. When I thanked her profusely on the phone, Tanya said, "Oh, I'm sure you'll find a way to pay me back." "Well, of course I will," I said. "That goes without saying." And well, it should have gone without saying. She was reminding me the favor wasn't out of friendship, but because she expected something in return. 2 days later, Tanya called and said she was coming to New York in a few months. She was just checking now if I could put her up then. Naturally, I could, but her blatant cashing in on the return favor so quickly was not a smooth move. When someone does something nice for them, big winners have a long, long memory. In fact, they consciously look for ways to return the favor. Had Tanya called, even years later, of course I would have remembered that I owed her one. Frankly, I was glad it came up so quickly so I could even the score. Nevertheless, I do wish the whole barter aspect had been left unspoken. It tarnished what should have been a generous sharing on both sides. Tarnish always wears off on the tarnisher. Technique number 55. Tit for wait, tat. When people do you favors, and it's obvious that you owe them one, wait a suitable amount of time before asking them to pay up. Let them enjoy the fact, or fiction, that you did it out of friendship. Don't call in your tit for their tat too swiftly. 56. What not to say at parties. Use the parties are for prater technique. In ancient times, when police were hot on the trail of a thief, he'd frantically seek a church to duck into. The crook knew if he could get to an altar, the frustrated posse could not arrest him until he came out. When a pack of wolves in the jungle is in hot pursuit of a jackrabbit, the frightened bunny's eyes seek a hollow log. he knows the wolves can't devour him until he emerges. Likewise, in the human jungle, big cats have certain safe havens. Although unspoken, they are as secure as a 10th century altar or a hole in the log. I call these safe havens. I have a friend, Kirsten, the president of an advertising agency, who each year invites me to her company's Christmas party. One year, the holiday spirit was in extra high swing. Conviviality was high and the champagne flowed freely. It was one terrific bash. The evening wore on, more bubbly flowed, and the decibel level of the holiday revelers went up and up and up. So high, in fact, that Kirsten told me she was going to tiptoe out the back door and offered to drop me off at my place. As we were making our way toward the exit, we heard a woozy voice in the crowd. "Oh, Kirsten! Kirsten!" A mailroom worker, warped with too much seasonal spirit, wobbled up to her boss and said, "You know, this is a great party, but I've been doing some figuring. If half of what it cost went into a child care facility for the seven, you count 'em, seven mothers with preschool children who work here." Kirsten, a top communicator, took Jane's hand in hers and gave a big smile. She said, "Jane, you are obviously excellent at math. You're right. Just about half of what this party cost would indeed pay for the opening of such a facility. Let's talk about it during business hours." We then made a swift departure. On the way back to my place, she let out a big breath and said, "Phew, I'm glad that's over." "Didn't you enjoy the party, Kirsten?" I asked. "Well, sure," she said, "but you never know what's going to happen. For instance," she said, "that remark Jane made." She went on to explain that management had already had several meetings about opening a child care facility for employees. In fact, plans for turning an unused storage area into a beautiful nursery were already in the works. Naively, I asked Kirsten why she hadn't mentioned that to Jane. "It wasn't the right time or place," she said. Kirsten had handled the situation at the party the way any big winner would. No spoken confrontation now, but probable silent condemnation later. Technique number 56. Parties are for prater. There are several safe havens in the human jungle where even the toughest tiger knows he must not attack. One of these is parties. Parties are for pleasantries and good fellowship, not for confrontations. Big players, even when standing next to their enemies at the buffet table, smile and nod. They leave tough talk for tougher settings. 57. What not to say in a chance meeting. Use the "chance encounters are for chit-chat" technique. William, who sells widgets, has been trying to get a big winner on the phone for weeks to see if Big Winner's company will buy his line of widgets. BW is still considering Willie's widgets and plans eventually to return his call. However, at this point in our story, our little hero's phone has not rung. It just so happens one evening, Willie finds himself standing behind Big Winner in the supermarket line. What good fortune, thinks Willie. Oh, heck, thinks Big Winner. I hope he's not going to hit me with talk of his widgets at this hour. Those who appreciate safe havens know that there are two very different endings to this story. The Willie who brings up widgets with a, "Aha, I've got you now," gleam in his eye, never gets his call returned. Even if Big Winner preferred Willie's widgets above all others, he would find the supermarket entrapment sufficiently painful to punish the little loser. However, the Willie who just says, "Hello there, BW, how good to see you," with nary a word of widgets, shows that he's a big player too. This Willie will most certainly get his call returned, probably the next day, out of Big Winner's relief and gratitude for Willie's graciousness. Technique number 57. Chance encounters are for chit-chat. If you're selling, negotiating, or in any sensitive communication with someone, do not capitalize on a chance meeting. Keep the melody of your mistaken meeting sweet and light. Otherwise, it could turn into your swan song with Big Winner. 58. Here's how to make them like you, even when you've messed up. Use the my goof, your gain technique. Visiting an important client's office, I once tripped on a rug and took a nosedive, making a 3-point landing in a vase on her desk. My nose was spared, but her vase shattered into smithereens. 2 tubes of crazy glue and lots of where does this darn piece go later, the vase was back on her desk, and we agreed it looked pretty good. Nevertheless, the next day, I had a messenger deliver a beautiful vase with a dozen roses in it. The vase was 10 times the value of the almost totaled one. Whenever we speak now, my client tells me that every time she looks at the new vase, she smiles. That's a better incentive gift than a pen with your name on it. The next time I visit her office, my client may hide some of her more valuable breakables. But thanks to the my goof, your gain technique, there will be a next time. Technique number 58. My goof, your gain. Whenever you make a boner, make sure your victim benefits. It's not enough to correct your mistake. Ask yourself, what could I do for this suffering soul so he or she will be delighted that I made the flub? Then do it fast. In that way, your goof will become your gain. 59. Here's how to trap a rat with class. Use the leave and escape hatch technique. In Japan, some citizens prefer to lose their lives than to lose face. In America, the same death wish exists, with one modification. The Yank dreams of the death of the mortal who made him lose face. Why make enemies? Unless it's your obligation to catch cheaters or entrap liars, let them get away with it. Then immediately get them out of your life and the lives of those you're responsible for. Even when the case is open and shut against someone, when you've got the rat fink trapped, leave him an escape hatch. The best example I heard of this high sensitivity was from one of my clients. She was invited to brunch at the home of a wealthy socialite known as Lady Stephanie. Lady Stephanie's home was filled with beautiful objects of art. Not the least among them was an exquisite collection of extremely valuable Fabergé eggs, which all the guests admired. At the end of the elegant champagne brunch, my client told me she was walking out the door, chatting with several other guests. Just then, Lady Stephanie sidled up to one woman who was leaving at the same time as my client. "Oh, I'm so happy you were admiring my Fabergé collection," Lady Stephanie said, sliding her hand into the pocket of the guest's mink coat and plucking out one of her priceless eggs. "You must have wanted to see this one in the sunlight. Come, let us look at it together. It does reflect the bright light beautifully, doesn't it?" The mink-clad thief gulped and furtively looked around to see who had witnessed her gentle entrapment. My client and everyone in the foyer saw what had happened, but took Lady Stephanie's lead and pretended naivete of the attempted heist. Carrying the charade a step further, Lady Stephanie and the sticky-fingered guest admired the egg in the sunlight. Then Lady Stephanie, with her Fabergé egg secured safely between her perfectly manicured fingers, marched home to put the treasure in its rightful place. The attempted egg snatcher crawled back to her car from her last attendance at Lady Stephanie's coveted bashes. The hostess had let the foiled filcher get away with a few slivered shreds of her ego left intact. Why did Lady Stephanie come out ahead? Because everyone who witnessed and subsequently heard about the thwarted burglary has renewed respect for Lady Stephanie. Snaring the thief, yet sparing her pride, helped Lady Stephanie keep her reputation of the hostess with the mostest. Why do big winners let bad news people get away with bummers? Because, like mothers confronting naughty children to correct them, confronting creeps is a way of saying, I care. But by closing your mouth, and then the door forever, you are saying, you are so beneath me, I'm not going to even waste my words on you. Technique number 59. Leave an escape hatch. Whenever you catch someone lying, stealing, exaggerating, distorting, or deceiving, don't confront the dirty duck directly, unless it is your responsibility to catch or correct the culprit, or unless you are saving other innocent victims by doing so. Let the transgressor out of your trap with his tricky puss in one piece. Then resolve never to gaze upon it again. 60. Here's how to get whatever you want from service personnel. Use the buttercups for their boss technique. A complimentary letter is called a buttercup because it butters up the recipient. Buttercups are nice, but even nicer are buttercups about someone to their boss. I once needed a massive photocopying job. It was so immense that the assistant manager of Staples Office Supply Store didn't think it could be done by the end of the week. Nevertheless, grudgingly, he grumbled, "I'll try." In my enthusiasm and hope that he could, I gushed, "Wow, you're great! What's your boss's name? Your supervisor should get a letter of congratulations on hiring you. You really try harder for your customers." To my astonishment, not only was my printing job done 2 days early, but every time I walk into Staples, the assistant manager rolls out the red carpet. One fellow I know, Tim, a top travel agent, is a real can-do guy. He gets anything his friends ask for in a finger snap. He's the fellow to call when you want hard-to-get theater tickets. He's the guy to call when your airline says the hotel is booked or the flight is oversold. When I told him of my buttercup experience, Tim laughed and said, "Leal, of course, this is news to you? A complimentary letter to someone's boss, or the promise of one, is a great insurance policy. It's as good as a written rider that you will be well taken care of in the future." Now I have a standard letter in my computer. The buttercup reads as follows. "Dear," and you fill in the name of the supervisor, "I know how important customer service is to an organization such as yours. This letter is to commend," the name of the employee, "as an example of someone who gives exceptional customer service. You will continue to have my business, thanks in great part to the service given by," and you repeat the name of the employee. "Gratefully, Leal Lowndes." Technique number 60. Buttercups for their boss. Do you have a store clerk, an accountant, a law firm junior partner, a tailor, auto mechanic, maitre d', massage therapist, kids teacher, or any other worker you want special attention from in the future? The surefire way to make them care enough to give you their very best is to send a buttercup letter to their boss. 61. Here's how to be a leader in a crowd, not a follower. Use the lead the listeners technique. You're sitting in an auditorium with hundreds of fellow employees listening to the president of your firm introduce a new concept. As you're slouching anonymously in the audience, you think your expression is invisible to the man or woman at the podium? Not so. As a speaker, I guarantee you every one of my colleagues sees every smile, every frown, every light in every eye, and every emblem of extraordinary human intelligence flashing back at him or her. Likewise, the company president, making a speech, nervously surveys his corporate jungle, and, from the pusses peering back at him, he senses which employees are sympathetic and which are not. He also knows which in the sea of faces floating in front of him has the potential to be a heavy hitter just like himself. How? Because heavy hitters, even when they do not agree with the speaker, support the podium pontificator. Why? Because they know what it's like to be on. They know, no matter how big or little the cat in the front of the room, when he's giving a speech, he's concerned about the crowd's acceptance. When the company big shot delivers his last line, carefully contrived to bring the crowd to its feet or employees to acquiescence, Do you think he's unaware of who starts the trickle or the riptide of acceptance? No way! Though his head is down taking a bow, with the insight of a McCarthy-era spy, he perceives precisely who inaugurated the applause, precisely how long after the last words were uttered, and precisely how enthusiastically. Being the first to put your hands together, being the first to jump to your feet, and, if appropriate, being the first to shout bravo, gets you a big cat status with the tiger who was talking. Technique number 61, lead the listeners. Be the first to clap, no matter how small the crowd and no matter how informal the talk. Don't wait to see how everyone else is going to respond. Even if it's a small group of three or four people standing around, be the first to empathize with the speaker's ideas, the first to mutter, "Good idea." It's proof positive that you are a person who trusts your own instincts. 62. Here's how to make all the right moves. Use the great scorecard in the sky technique. Any minute, any second, any football fan knows the score. Even beer-guzzling Bill dozing in front of the TV set on Football Sunday knows. Poke his pudgy pot, and in a wink, he will tell you who's winning, who's losing, and precisely by how many points. Key players in the game of life are like Bill. Even when you think they're dozing, they are constantly aware of the score between themselves and everyone else in their life. That's friends and family included. They know who is winning, who is losing, and by how many points. Big winners, before putting pen to paper, fingers to keyboard, mouth to phone, or hand to someone else's to shake it, do a quick calculation. They ask themselves, who has the most to benefit from this relationship? What has each of us done recently that demands deference from the other? And what can I do to even the score? The great scorecard in the sky is not just bobbing over business people. If family members and friends look carefully over their loved ones' heads, they'll spot it. And like an over-the-counter stock, it goes up or down every day. When you mess up, you have to even your score by doing even more for the one who didn't. To keep love alive, keep your eye on the great scorecard in the sky. Several months ago, I met a nice chap named Charles at a convention. We started discussing our favorite foods. His was homemade linguine with pesto sauce. I like Charles, and I make a mean pesto sauce. The remarkable coincidence of these two elements emboldened me to invite him to my home for dinner. "Great," he said. "We'll set it for 7:30 the following Tuesday." Tuesday afternoon, I began preparations for the big date. The cuckoo clock on the wall monitored my progress. At 5 cuckoos, I run to the store to find pine nuts. By 6 cuckoos, I'm back home grinding basil and garlic. At 7 cuckoos, I'm folding napkins, setting the table, and pulling out fresh candles. Whoops, running late, I change clothes and spruce myself up. When 7:30 strikes, I am all ready. The pesto and I await his arrival. 8 o'clock rolls around, and no friend. Well, I figure, I'll open the wine to let it breathe. Another hour passes, and no Charles. The cuckoo calls me cuckoo 9 times now. I begin to believe the bird. It is evident Charles isn't coming. I have been stood up. The next day, Charles called with half-hearted apologies and a semi-plausible excuse. His car broke down. Gee, I'm sorry, I said. I wanted to say, did Martians capture you? Were you transported to another planet where there were no phones to call me? I resisted the sarcasm. However, he did sound contrite, so I was almost willing to forget it. Until his next question. He obviously wasn't aware of how he'd slipped in the great scorecard in the sky. Because instead of inviting me for linguine with pesto at a fine Italian restaurant to make up for his blooper, he asked, When can we reschedule at your house? Never, Charlie. Technique number 62, the great scorecard in the sky. Any two people have an invisible scorecard hovering above their heads. The numbers continually fluctuate, but one rule remains. Player with lower score pays deference to player with higher score. The penalty for not keeping your eye on the great scorecard in the sky is to be thrown out of the game permanently. A final word, your destiny. As we said in the introduction, nobody gets to the top alone. Over the years, the smooth moves of big winners have captured the hearts and conquered the minds of hundreds of people who helped boost them, rung by rung, to the top of whatever ladder they chose. How does one become an instinctive, smooth mover rather than a ragged rider through life? The answer became blindingly clear one snowy day last winter. Lumbering along in a neatly groomed track on cross-country skis, I spotted a Nordic skier swiftly striding toward me on the same trail. I didn't need to observe his high kick or his snazzy diagonal poling to let me know that I was obstructing the path of a pro. While mustering the energy to lug my throbbing legs out of the track so the super skier could soar past me, he deftly sidestepped out of the groove, leaving the groomed trail all for me. As he whizzed toward me, he slowed slightly, smiled, and nodded. He said, "Good morning. Beautiful day for skiing, isn't it?" I appreciated his deference and the insinuation that we were equals in the snow. I knew he was not thinking, "Hey, look at me, here I am." But, "Ah, there you are. Let me make room for you." As I implied in the opening words of this program, the difference in the life success between those two types of thinkers is impossible to calculate. Why was the super skier able to pull off his move so gracefully? Was he born with the skill? No, his was a deliberate move that grew out of practice. Practice is also the fountainhead of all smooth communications moves. Excellence is not a single and solitary action. It is the outcome of many years of making small, smooth moves, tiny ones like the little tricks we've explored in How to Talk to Anyone. These moves create your destiny. Remember, repeating an action makes a habit. Your habits create your character. And your character is your destiny. May success be your destiny.
Thank you for listening to How to Talk to Anyone, written and read by Leo Lowndes. Directed by Elisa Weberman, recorded and engineered by CDM Sound Studios, and produced by Elisa Weberman and Alfred Martino. Production copyright 2004 by Listen and Live Audio Incorporated. All rights reserved. This has been a Listen and Live Audio production. To receive a complete catalog of other fine audiobooks, please call 1-800-653-9400 or visit our website at www.listenandlive.com. If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to listen to How to Be a People Magnet, also by Leo Lowndes.